Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock Dittus. This is the place where we are simplifying the good life, and I am joined by
Brandon Rhodes. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We'll be covering food and alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, communications, the internet, arts and culture, sunshine, and that's it.
World-class transit. And that's all. Well, it is the beginning of spring officially now, I think.
Yes.
And the reason we know that is because you're opening a can of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's warm today. It was like 81 was the projected high. I'm not sure if that was any higher or lower than it actually was, but it was warm.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. So we're also joined by Adam Clement of RetroShift, the innovative new derailleur system. Thank you for coming and joining us. It's good to have you on the show. We're admittedly a little bit scattered today because we've been traveling. Brandon, you and I were in Seattle for the weekend for a conference, and I spent a lot of time on the fine metro transit system in King County, Washington, which is it's really amazing.
Were thrilled to get to use it.
I was.
I think I'll stay at my friend's house, and I get to take the bus.
That's right, yeah.
Like, so many people are like, I have to ride the damn bus.
Well, if it wasn't for the tunnel, it might not have been quite as exciting, but Seattle has that transit tunnel that goes all the way through downtown.
It's pretty cool, actually. I didn't know it was there until a few months ago. It was a shock.
Sure. So they've got light rail that goes down to the airport from downtown, and then they have a bus system that goes everywhere. All the buses that go outside of the downtown core funnel through this little tunnel, and there are either one set of stairs or several sets of stairs to get you down to where those buses leave and arrive. And it was fantastic just to see all a system like that working so smoothly. I think of Portland as a big town sometimes, but when I go to a bigger town, I know I'm wrong. So, yeah.
You're from Puyallup.
Well, yeah, exactly. I grew up in Cowtown, so What can you do? Adam, have you been to Seattle? Have you seen the wonders of its transit system?
It's been probably 10 years.
Oh, sorry. You know what? I think we don't actually have you on mic there yet.
What?
I think might.
Is that okay?
That might work.
See if the cable matches up.
How's that?
All right. Give it to me again.
How's that?
Oh, I can hear you.
We're good.
Right now. All right.
You might regret this, but good.
Now that we've got you on, yeah. Well, my finger's on the mute button, sir. So you've been to Seattle as well. You're familiar with that great Northwestern city.
Yeah, great place. I mean, it's been 10 years. Lived in Boston many, many years ago, which makes everything seem pretty small and minor.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And we actually have, a couple of Boston listeners out there, listening to us as well, which is cool. And that's where my in-laws live. So I've spent a fair amount of time in the city of Boston. It's almost like a second home. It's more like a third home, I guess, to me. But yeah, of the three. We should talk about Bike Safe Boston and our recent collaboration with them, because we haven't actually talked about it on the show
yet.
Yeah,
we haven't. That's fine.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is we've been distributing these bicycle accident report cards to bike shops around town for a couple weeks now. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually mail Josh. Josh Zissen is the guy. We've had him on the show. He was back in January, I think, we played the interview that we recorded together. And he had asked me to drop a couple of these cards that he had printed and shipped to our house. And you were the one that received the boxes, I think.
Yes.
And
you were in Germany.
A 1,000 cards printed or something like that?
At least.
Yeah, it's a lot of them.
Yeah, and check one of those out, man. They're awesome.
Yeah, business cards being printed. You don't think of a business card as being a large thing. But when you get that many of them all in one box, well, actually, it's two boxes. But they're heavy and they're big.
Well,
so.
Okay, we should say what the hell is on the card.
Yes. Do you want to explain that?
Instead of narrating how they descended from heaven.
That's really cool. I mean, it folds in half. It's a book in itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it has splendid little infographics on it, outlining basic tips of bicycle safety, contextualized according to the bicycle safety and right-of-way laws of your jurisdiction, in this case, Portland, Oregon.
Nicely stated, sir.
Fucking hey.
That was well done. Yeah, the bicycle accident report.
I didn't
report.
Know if I was going to land that one, but it works.
The bicycle accident report card was Josh's idea, and he started doing this with Boston and Massachusetts bike law. Because sometimes you go out, you get into a wreck on your bicycle. Hope you don't, but if you do, you're not usually carrying your car's insurance packet, which you know usually has like a little form for you to fill out the details of the accident and who was around when it happened, and you know it's just the sort of thing that unless you're a really really level-headed person, usually the stress of an accident will probably kind of drive most of those details from your mind. So the fact that you could in fact have a little card, wallet card sized thing. That you write all these particulars on in the event of an accident is really helpful and really useful. So, anyways, yeah, we are sponsoring the Oregon version of the cards, part of the Bike Safe Nation project, which he's hoping to have all 50 states covered at some point. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that he just finished inking a deal with Planet Bike.
Oh, great.
Because Planet Bike, they make fantastic bike lights and whatnot. They are underwriting the costs, I think, for, if not all of the remaining states, many of the remaining states that still have not yet had cards made for them by Josh.
That makes me feel so much happier having just spent $68 on a light from them. So good. That's great.
Yeah. They're one of the great options. So, Josh has been doing that and will continue to do that. The other part of the whole project is bikesafenation.com, which right now is just a website kind of explaining the project and, his basic thesis, but eventually is hoping to have a network of websites that will explain the bicycle laws of each state by state. So if you're a touring cyclist, for example, you can go out riding and you'll know what to expect when you cross the border from Oregon to Idaho or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Although the culture has much to do with it, with the law. It should be mentioned that it does have the specific law, like code OR 12.78.3.2 or whatever
right.
It is.
And, right.
I've never been in an accident and had needed to use it, so I'm afraid to actually carry one with me. Like I'm gonna, the first day I do it, I'll need it. Have either of you guys been in an accident? Would this have been a useful thing?
Sure, I have. I this is kind of like an umbrella, though, isn't it? If you take an umbrella, it doesn't rain, so surely
yeah, exactly.
You can
raise it. Mm-hmm.
I call that the immutable law of rain gear. If you put on your rain pants, it will stop raining.
Yep. But yeah, I had an accident years, guys. Downtown, guy opened a door on me, told me I should be on the sidewalk.
Downtown, which ironically is illegal. But that was what he told you anyways. So you bumped into him and
he bumped into you. It
well, yes,
like.
Yes.
Yeah. He threw his car door out into the traffic, basically, which is the way the law is. It's pretty standard, simple. I think I did more damage to him than he did to me. So
that's how it should be. That's, you know, if that's going to happen, we hope it goes that way. Yeah. As long as you're covered by, you know, as long as it's not technically your fault, you know. Did you really, really work that bike accident? Really, really do some damage. You're okay though. You didn't get physically hurt. Your bike didn't get damaged.
It's been so many years. I think, you know, I had some blood on my hand, but really minor. Just
okay.
Like
that's a relief.
Nothing. Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
But I still live in fear of it. When I do ride, when I'm really out riding hard, my biggest fear is somebody's going to open a car door on my knee. That's just.
Yeah,
I haven't even thought of the knees.
It keeps me away from the cars. It's good, you know. Keep my.
Yeah, for sure. I've never actually been in a bike accident. I don't think I've had a couple of scrapes here and there, but as far as a bicycle car sort of collision thing, I don't think I've ever done that.
You are a very careful bicyclist.
I'm far more cautious than most. I think, yeah. It takes me twice as long to get anywhere because I'm doing
good Baptist kid.
I suppose so. Yeah. It's my moral, my strict moral upbringing it's hard to shake, but,
trying hard.
But I did realize that, I was going out and, distributing these cards to the bike shops. And then I realized about 2 or 3 days into, you know, contacting shops and dropping them off that I did not in fact have any of these cards in my own wallet. Like I had, you know, a bunch of them sitting in a big box at home, but I was out somewhere one time and I was like, oh yeah, I've been working on these accident report card things. And then I realized I had none on my person. So now I carry two, one for me and one for somebody else, who might need it someday. So Anyways, that's it's been good.
Good citizen.
And yeah, it's bikesafeboston.com. Bikesafeportland.com is a website that hasn't quite been finished yet, but it is there. And then bikesafenation.com is the whole umbrella, the whole thing. So thanks, Josh. And we're excited to be in partnership with you and be distributing these here in Portland. We do have a list of all the bike shops that I've been to so far, and that list is growing as I continue to make contact. So,
and not just been to, but dropped off these things.
That's right, yeah. I have been to far more bike shops in town that I have not yet dropped them off to. But yeah, so that's an exciting piece of the project. Yeah, I think I mentioned last time we're on Stitcher Smart Radio. So if you have an iPhone or I think it's an Android thing as well. If you want to use that to get our show, you can. So yeah, that's it.
Throw that in there. We don't have any headlines for y'all.
That's right.
But so I'd say just jump right into it.
That sounds great to me. Yeah.
We're
flying by the seat of
our
pants
here.
Yeah, seriously. Well, it happens. So, well, Adam, yeah, do you want to tell us first of all, what was that?
Introduction music. Do you have any on yours?
Oh, yeah. Hang on just a moment here. Let me find, would you prefer
Royal Fanfare?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
a good one.
All right. Sounds good.
That'll work.
Let me pull that
up. Queen
and
I are tight, you know.
All right. Good. Here it is. We give you Adam Clement, the inventor of Retro Shift. Thanks for joining us again. And were telling me you've got a bunch of these like in your house right now.
Yeah, my kitchen is really a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and a war zone.
And war zone, everything else. It's I eat out a lot right now. Yeah,
there you go.
Not much room.
Right.
Yeah, I got a few hundred brake levers in my kitchen. I've got many more on the way. I get emails every day, people ask me when this next batch could be ready. Most of them are nice, some of them are rude.
Yeah. Here and again, yeah. Well, people want their shifters.
They
if they don't have them, they get testy.
They do. So. They've been pretty just outrageously crazy for them.
So what's the matter with regular derailleurs now? How are you improving on this classic?
It's not an improvement. It's just it's just a change. Uh-huh. Back in the 90s, after STI came out, you know, you couldn't even find a touring bike with Byrons on it. Everything had STI shifting, which was the cool new thing, which was great. But there's definitely some problems. There's some reasons why people do use Byron shifters. They're more reliable.
And those two different kinds of shifters, for those who aren't familiar, can you give summaries of those?
Oh, sure, yeah. So Shimano brought out a system which enabled you to rest your hands on the brake hoods, which meant your fingers could be in contact with the brakes, which is safe, and you could also shift at the same time. So you didn't have to take your hands away from the brakes to shift.
Right,
huge,
right.
Big advancement. Very big advancement. Very cool. Actually,
it blew my mind the first time I saw this.
First time you tried it? Yeah. It's like, whoa! Well, the first time I saw it, I was like, what the... this could be done a lot simpler. was the thought. But yeah, so really cool. And when I did RetroShift, I went through about 100 years of patents to try and... working with a lawyer to make sure that... we were doing something that wasn't patented and wasn't, you know, we were allowed to do it.
Right. That would be kind of unfortunate if you found out that you had this great idea and then all of a sudden you realize that you had
Shimano
to stop.
Sitting on it.
Right.
Right, right. I mean, it'd be fine if someone else was making it and I was allowed to make it. But if I start making it and someone gives me a call and says, hey, you're not allowed to do that. It's like,
right.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So it's good to do that research ahead of time.
Yeah, definitely. Go due diligence. Yeah.
How long did it take?
Well, my lawyer dude did most of it, but I had a lot of fun. I went through a lot of them myself just because it was a riot. Just
yeah.
Bicycle patents, I don't know if you look at the history of mankind.
That's okay. We know what you meant.
Bicycles are just, I mean, they're still the pinnacle of technology. I mean, absolutely. They're very refined beasts. They're
the most efficient way to get somebody from A to B.
Exactly. Definitely. And make you healthy while you do it, too.
Yeah.
All those great things.
And have fun.
And fun, yep. and you get to carry cool accident report cards now, which you can't do with walking dogs. So going through these patents, really fun. I mean, back in the 1920s, they were doing some crazy stuff that people are doing now that you think is new, but it's not. Everything's been done before. Even the retro shift kind of shifting action, people were doing that back in the 40s.
Hence, really? Retro shift.
Well, the name, you know, the name just kind of came naturally because it looks a little funky and old.
Mm-hmm.
But the name really is meant to describe more just a way of thinking, just trying to solve problems by looking at them more simply instead of, you know, here, we need to fix this item. Mm-hmm. Let's go full out all the technology we can. Sometimes if you look at it a little more simply, mm-hmm. there's another way you can do it.
Okay.
And that's, I have some other products I'm working on too at the moment, which are kind of fall into that realm.
Nice. Nice. So simpler solutions to complex problems.
Right. Mm. Exactly.
That's fantastic, actually. We were glad to have you on, but I didn't even realize that was an aspect of it. So that makes me doubly happy that we've killed two birds with one proverbial stone here. How long did it take just from like the inception of the idea until like you had a product you could sell?
Back in 1993, I was working at the bike gallery, and that's when I first kind of came across STI. I'd seen it before, but I was putting together road bikes, and I just didn't feel comfortable. I've never actually owned a pair of STI, to be honest. In all these years, all the cycling I've done, I've always had downtube shifters, old pair of friction. Mm-hmm. Friction, for Christ's sake.
Right.
While everyone else was doing this cool stuff, I stuck with friction. I rode plenty of bikes with STI and Ergo Power on them, but I just didn't feel comfortable with it. Something in me just, it didn't feel right. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I was losing something from the experience.
So that's really interesting. Like, it was almost like you were selling your soul if you got an index shifter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. It's kind of more manly, too, to have your friction shifting. Now people just think you're an old fuddy-duddy, which is probably more accurate. I've always kind of tinkered with things. So I got a hacksaw out and a few bits and pieces, and I just started chopping stuff up, and I made a set. And I rode them for a couple of days. I'm like, that's really cool. Of course, everyone in the shop is just like, get a pair of STIs.
Like, what is this?
Get over it. So I tossed them out, went back to my downshift shifters and called it good. I left the bike industry back in, it's been about 8 years now,
okay.
8 to 10 years. I started a company, security company, providing security to the airport and some other businesses in town.
Right.
And the workload, everything else, and my need to be able to travel to many sites around the city quickly, I really haven't... I feel like a fake. I haven't been on a bicycle much. Just terrible.
Well, what you're doing right now is telling us that, as opposed to trying to dance around the fact, which I would say is commendable.
I respect that more.
Yeah. Right, right.
But yeah, so I'm trying to change that too. And I do. I spend more of my time on the bicycle now, as much as I can. It feels really great to be... I feel like I'm back, which is good.
That's nice. Kind of a bouncing back sort of thing. But it is really, it's a tricky thing. I mean, well, the security business, for one, I'm sure, doesn't lend itself. I mean, there are a lot of bicycle security patrols that I've seen around. But if you're in charge of security, that means you've got to be in a lot of places a lot of times, sometimes maybe almost at once. And that the bicycle, while it is an elegant solution, is not the simplest solution for being in a lot of places at one time. So, yeah. What have you most enjoyed about getting back in the saddle again?
Enjoyment is growing slowly. Because I'm really frustrated with myself. Because I used to be pretty healthy. When I worked at the bike gallery, I mean, I was riding 7 days a week. It was a very different life. And on the weekends, we were riding up in the West Hills, pushing a little bit. And now I'm having to kind of cry to push even a tiny bit. So it's that's kind of a learning curve. I really feel good about doing it. I mean, I'm getting back out on the bike now with that little bit of excitement. Whereas it's been... past few months, I've got to get on the bike and I really need to get out and just push a little bit more.
Right.
Now I'm finally getting to the point where it's like, there's a hill coming.
It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. It's getting
there'll
better.
Be a downhill after that, so it's okay.
Every hill pays you back.
Yeah.
Both ways.
Unless you're in Eastern Oregon, in which case you might just be climbing up to the Mesa and then you have to stay up there and battle with the wind.
Oh, for God's sake.
That can happen.
This has been your daily nihilist report with Brock. Everything is for naught.
But it's possible.
Some resentment about an old ride, perhaps?
No. We had a great time. It was just, sometimes it's hard to know what to expect. The terrain is different than you think it is. Now, my wife and I did a tour, 3-4 weeks ago now, over spring break, where, we just rode through Eastern Oregon from Bend up to the Columbia River. It's beautiful. But, the hills don't behave like you think they would. Just as an aside, you mentioned on the website, I think rather prominently, that these are made by goats.
Actually, the whole, everything is, all the background workings and runnings are handled by goats. Small fleet of very evolved goats.
It seems like it would be difficult to find those.
They found me, actually.
There you go. Fantastic.
They put the idea in my head telepathically that the whole, you know, I'm just a pawn in the whole game.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe that's really the way that it ought to be.
Yep.
I'm so eager to learn more about this. So explain the designed by goats.
No, I wasn't joking about
that. There it is.
It's right there on the website.
So how do they improve on a...
Okay, so basic system. There is no STI system or integrated braking system. People sometimes call them brifters, which allows you to shift and brake at the same time, but also lets you have friction. So the system we have allows you to do that. You don't have to do it. You can use index, but it'll let you do that as well. A main issue with STI for many years with tandem riders, a lot of people, is tuning the front derailleur. You can't really kind of just tune it exactly where you want.
Like, right.
Camping Nola will do it, but Shimano won't. You can do that with this system.
Okay.
Which is nice. The system we have, too, is incredibly simple. So, again, retroshift, you know, why make a nuclear bomb when you can just use a knife to cut a piece of bread?
That's right. <It's> like... I wish I'd thought about that sooner.
Yeah, just simple stuff. So, cyclocross is kind of the main focus of the product.
Mm-hmm.
Cyclocross is muddy, dirty, just aggressive, nasty.
High impact, pop.
And this place where you're going to want to be on your brakes, I imagine.
Cyclocross riders tend to stay on the hoods.
Mm-hmm.
Road riders racing want to be on the drops. So, you know, I'll say it flat out. Retroshift is not for someone who's a road racer.
Right.
It's not your deal. If you're a road racer.
This is also great for commuting as well. Like,
yeah,
I've never done cyclocross, but this is, I'm up on my hoods all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'd be good for touring or something else too.
Oh yeah,
there we go. We have the product sample here.
Yeah,
those are great.
Yeah,
it looks like this is so. Wendell Berry has a great the Kentucky farmer and poet. Yeah, Brock, you're sweating profusely.
I am. It's a warm
has a great essay. I think it's called A Good Scythe, and it's just him reflecting on why, as a farmer, he likes to use a manual scythe, no matter how much fucking harder it is than like the electric things, because he doesn't know how to fix it and it makes all this noise. And like when I look at this, it's like, I feel like I know how to, I could fix this if it breaks down. Like there's an elegance to it that is like, when I look at what this is an improvement or an alternative to, I have no idea how to fucking fix that thing.
Yeah.
So I like this.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if this is what you were thinking about, Adam, but the idea that index shifting is a little bit more complicated. And it takes it just takes a little bit more know-how. Like, you have to be a mechanic in order to fix an index shifter if it goes awry.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with friction shifting, if you're doing it that way, basically all you need to know is how to loosen the cable and tug it until it's in the place where you want it to be. So is that kind of what you were
right.
thinking?
Yeah, pretty much right.
Yeah.
And something else easily too. I mean, again, the primary focus of these is a tool for cyclocross. I mean, most riders are going to want to use like a set of Shimano Ultegra, which are $400 a pair. They're complicated, and after a couple of seasons of use,
mm-hmm.
you're really bashing the crap out of them. They get dirt in them. They stop working. You cry. You go buy another one. It's $200 for another lever. This system here, it costs under $200 to get the whole setup going. When you crash and break one, it's $22 to replace it.
That's not bad.
And it's lighter.
Yeah, yeah. And no one wants to cry in public, so.
No.
And if it...
if you can avoid that piece.
And if it gives you sauce, or sauce, is that a euphemism?
Sauce, man.
If it's spicy with you, you can win the argument.
Yes.
Mine, my hood's bit down and in through the brake cable and inside it, and then it cranked around in the gears, and David Hetty and I probably spent 45 minutes just trying to figure out how to pull that shit out of there, because there's no way. I was like, can't we disassemble it? And as a bike mechanic for several years, he was like, hell no. No, you can't. It's like, I'm sure this happens frequently with these.
And this was your STI lever?
Yeah, STI.
You've really had an STI lever break on you?
Yeah.
Oh, right. It, never heard that before.
I don't know if it was the brake. I don't recall if it was the brake or the gear one. But yeah, it just was biting tight and eventually cut through, and there was about an inch of wire that was just fed all throughout, because I kept on going clicking it, and it just fucking ate it all the way through.
That's rough.
So I'm like this. I don't like friction as much as index, but the fact that I can fix it Mm-hmm. Next time that happens.
Yeah, definitely.
This will do both. I mean, you can throw a 9, 10, 8, 7 speed index lever on it too. I mean, you can swap between them.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it'll do it.
Yeah.
It's designed to work with a Shimano down tube and Byron shifters, which are pretty plentiful, pretty simple. I mean, many people have them on the bikes.
There you go.
Which is kind of cool, because back in the 90s, I was just saying, there was no Byron shifters anymore. SGI came out, it was adopted so much. Every touring bike had it on, and these poor people are out touring with broken shift levers. And eventually, you go into a bike shop now, it's refreshing. It's like probably 10% of the bikes have Byron shifters on them again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was David Hetty was a big proponent of those. That's why I got them in the first place. Was just the idea that, yeah, if you got a shifter, you might as well have it in a useful place. I don't go into the drops all that much, but it is nice to have that. Yeah.
But when I do,
boy howdy. It's just nice to have them out somewhere, you know, where they're not going to be messed with, I guess. You were saying, Adam, a little bit about you had some consternation around the whole manufacturing process, just thinking locally and globally, trying to figure out how financially to deal with the various aspects of all that. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. It's on my mind a lot. I'm talking with American local manufacturers right now, trying to get quotes and so forth for future products. The product we have right now, the main basic part of it is a brake lever that you mm-hmm. you probably have the same exact model on your bike. It's a Tektro.
I think I do. Yeah,
R200, very simple, great brake lever. I mean, you can take it apart and fix it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That makes up a very 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 small percentage of the whole cost of what it costs to make these units. I think somebody told me technically I could say the product's made in America already. I'm not going to do that.
Right,
no way.
Right.
But So by getting parts from Taiwan, which great country, good people, stuff like China, which I have different feelings about.
But sure.
Then again, you know, you look at a country like China, the people who are born there and live there, they don't really have much say over the government. So in a way, you know, you don't want to really hold it against them. But I do want to make it in America. If I made it in America right now, the cost would be so much higher that no one would buy it.
Right.
Which, what am I, you know, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
If I make it partly in Taiwan, I can provide it to bike shops. They can sell it for a good margin. So the bike shops are healthy. If I make it in Portland, all in Portland, the local machine shop's healthy, but then the bike shops make a very small margin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to balance those two up and go, which way is actually going to put more food on more plates and more homes in America? And it's actually to go the Taiwanese route and provide the bike shops a product they can sell. It's kind of a catch-22, though, because if everybody was making shit in America, it would be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would be fixed. But I mean, I can try. I'm pushing it best I can. I've got all the parts are machined here in Portland, anodized here, laser engraved here, except for the one bulk part that comes in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm looking at providing cable ferrules, which are pretty expensive parts. I'm going to have those made in America. There's Wheels Manufacturing is a great company, makes parts here in the States.
Okay.
So we're going to put them in a packet.
You know, I like a good ferrule.
Yeah, good. You're good, a good ferrule. Yeah.
Now, I first learned about that word when I had an electric guitar that had a ferrule for strings going through the body, and one of them fell out, and I realized that I couldn't play my guitar, or I couldn't string it properly without one.
What's a ferrule?
A ferrule is the one I had was a little cup-shaped thing that went into the body, and it allowed the cable to pass through the guitar, or the in this case the guitar string, to pass through the guitar without being dampened by the wood of the body of the guitar.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, but in your case, a ferrule would just be...
Just sticks on the end of your cable housing, so that all those little bits of wires don't...
That was a long way around.
His answer was way better, Brock.
That's right. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I remember just trying to figure out how to pronounce it. That was the hardest part for me. So, yeah. But anyways, you're having those made as well, and...
They're already made part, but you have to look for them. I mean, mm-hmm. they're like a dollar a piece instead of 10 cents. Mm-hmm. But, you know, can I swallow $1.80 to make sure I go one step closer to being in America? Yeah.
Right,
that's,
right.
That's mm-hmm. what I want to do.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. I'm just trying to figure out. There are so many aspects of the financial system that are... It's not that they're unaccounted for. It's just it's really hard to know where your money is going, and you know, trying to figure out what works for your ethical system is really, it's not an easy proposition. It takes a lot of thought and a lot of thinking through. So yeah, that's
it's a relief that there's no perfect, you know, like you're saying, like there's great opportunities, whether you have the Taiwanese one or the American one. It's like, well, mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? These are both pretty good things. You don't got to guilt trip yourself either way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the big trick is really trying to find out, like, how, like you were saying, for the bike shops that are stocking your product, how do you make it a good situation for them so that they can stay in business as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. My greatest fear is 20 years from now, you'll be walking to Best Buy to buy a bicycle. I mean, that's where I don't want us to go. They're all going to have electronic shifting on them, and it's going to be toss it out when it breaks.
Right, yeah. Right. Have you heard about wireless shifting systems?
Not yet.
What? No.
Okay. Well, I think I'm trying to remember where. I believe Bike Snob was making fun of it. Something, yeah, where basically it was like you'd have a shift lever up on your handlebars. You got the derailleur in back, but instead of a cable system,
Bluetooth,
it would be, yeah, basically like a wireless signal from front to back. And then some sort of servo motor to shift the actual derailleurs. It seems like it would just be, there's that tiny bit of unreliability if you're depending on electric power to shift that might not do what you want it to do all the time.
It sounds like a good idea, though. I mean, we're going down the path of electronic shifting. And I've had some people contact me, a guy with cerebral palsy who couldn't use one hand.
Mm, yeah.
So we were trying to figure out a way to take my system plus an STI system and combine them together so he could do everything with one hand. I was like, you know, this is really cool, but really an electronic shifting would be perfect for you because, you can shift.
Right.
And if those Bluetooths are connected, are powered by a dyno hub, like...
Mm, yeah.
That's great.
Right, yeah. Right. And then you're not...
And Bluetooth takes like almost no electricity. Like the newest version of it's like, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Yeah. And if you're making the electricity yourself, then you don't have to carry batteries with you, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The really useful piece of that, it seems like, is like if there's someone dealing with a disability who would love to be riding their bike, but just can't make it work. It is nice to know that there's innovation for that.
I'm curious, you said you've got a few other ideas. You don't have to like spill the beans on some other things you're working on, but where is the bicycle for being like the climax of human ingenuity? How could it be better or more simple?
I don't know. I have to kill you.
No. Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. I realize asking it may not be able to answer that.
No, there's nothing super, super great coming from me. It's just options. I mean, Retroshift is a cool system, but it's also the most heinous, horrible thing anyone's ever seen to some people. You know, it's just an option.
So just creating quality products that are going to be a good alternative.
Yeah, something simple that works. I mean, I don't know, Retroshift, it's simple, it's lighter, it's cheaper, it's faster, it's got a lot of plus points, but it's ugly. it's not cool, it's just what it is. The other product I'm working on actually is a bicycle rack.
Mm. Nice.
So yeah, it's going to be basically carry twice as much as your current rack.
Nice. So this would be a cargo solution.
Not bad.
Figure that out. Yeah, just we've had the same old boring racks for years, and now it's time for a retroshift in bike racks.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Nice, nice. So I'm curious. You talk about retroshifting your perspectives, your thoughts, the way you think about solutions. Where else has that come up in your life? Are you a Luddite of some note?
I don't. This is embarrassing. Yeah. Okay, so I've got a few thousand LP records. So I don't really listen to CDs.
We support that.
I've got I've used to be a really avid photographer. I mm-hmm. still have my analog camera. Digital cameras are very cool, but just there's no enjoyment for me using
sure.
a digital camera. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of like a lot of people. There's some kind of quality to. Like all my design work I do on a piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
sitting in front of the stereo, just doodling. So
right.
I have to hand it off to someone else. One of the goats
there
takes
you go.
It over for the
perfect
the CAD work.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a photograph of one of the goats working on the shifting system on the website.
Is that right? I should see if I can pull that up.
They love their multi-touch AutoCAD.
Products segment there, I think.
Okay. Products.
Rock, you might have to maximize the window.
I might actually.
Yeah, there he is. There, V lever.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I see him there. Yeah, yeah, and he's actually looking at the. Yeah, is that? It's a classy computer he's using.
No, he works outside. Goats aren't really house trained.
Right, right. Well, so, what goat would be, respectively?
I mean, they could be. They're very highly evolved, intelligent beings, but they like just let it hang out when they're working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, you get that CAD design from the goat. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And then under the support page, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's another guy on his break.
I'm curious what a goat does on its break. Oh, there we go, and it's hanging out on top of one of the Portland police vehicles.
It's a supreme picture.
And that's Polly finishing up on a windshield wiper repair. Good times.
Are these your goats, sir?
Not mine.
Okay.
No, you might even say that the goats are maybe the owners of him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It might be on the other way
it's
around.
It's like somebody might refer to the company they work as their company.
Right.
They just really work there. That's right. The same thing. These are my goats.
Okay.
Yeah.
You work for them. Yeah. What's in your LP collection?
Oh, God. A lot of late 70s new wave, mm-hmm. lots of punk.
Reckless Eric.
Nice.
80s, 90s, modern, everything. Mm-hmm. I've never given up buying the stuff. Classical, a lot of classical.
Nice.
Punk, classical, those two.
I was going to say, yeah, the fact that you find a man with discerning taste who listens both to classical and to new wave. Is impressive. That's a gap that cannot often be bridged. So, good work.
But I can't get into jazz. Just never managed. Mm-hmm. I think it's the structure. Punk and classical both a lot of structure in there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, quite so. There, you would say maybe punk is more defined by structure than anything else. There's only four chords you can use mm-hmm. in punk, and that's
really
well. I mean, you know,
I don't know. I don't know music. To me, that's like mind-boggling shit.
The reason some people don't like punk music, I think, is because it's so adherent to form. So, yeah.
It was a great time, though, because a lot of people had something to say. And when punk came along, it's like, fuck, we're going to say it. We don't care if we can't play. We're going to play anyway. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people, a lot of creation, you know, a lot of, you know, juices flowed. And
yeah.
People got really into it, and it was cool.
Yeah, for sure.
You didn't have to go to school to make a record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and unless it was the rock and roll high school. Did you ever hear of the Mighty Lemon Drops?
Oh, yeah,
New
of
wave.
Course.
Yeah, that was a little discovery that came with my first MacBook, I think, or my iBook at that point. iBook? Is it? I can't remember my Apple Power. History and yeah, the hierarchy of names of products.
What is an iBook?
It'd take a long time to explain. But no, the Mighty Lemon Drops Inside Out was one of the MP3s included on the computer when it came shipped in the box. So Steve Jobs apparently liked them as well, and I went out and bought their record. So,
you know, to me, that's kind of like listening to great old punk music on the elevator. It kills it. Lemon Drops will never be the same now.
now that they came stock on an ebook.
Maybe if we could just forget I ever said that and please continue to enjoy them.
You got the wrong band, right?
They are fantastic. Who's someone you hate?
I don't know if I hate anyone. I don't listen to them.
That was them.
Nickelback.
Oh, yeah, okay. See,
fantastic.
Oh, wow. They're on the next MacBook Air, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling the story last hour with some other friends, but we were talking about one of the guys that we were talking to at the conference that we were at this weekend, mm-hmm. Tom Sine, 76, 77, loves gardening, loves like living with people, in a big community house where people eat meals together and all that. He's a real retro sort of guy. And
he has a golden lab that wears a t-shirt, for God's sake.
Is that right?
He's an odd man.
That's fantastic.
Is it a cut-off t-shirt, though?
No, it's like an extra large.
So it drags on the ground.
Now I just have to say, no, it's because the dog like sheds and tries to like chew on itself, so it's to stop it. It's like the cone of shame.
Oh, okay.
But I like to think of it as because Tom is cool and like puts a fucking shirt on his dog.
Right, right. Well, those can both be true.
That crashed.
I was just going to say, like, we were having a conversation about peak oil and the idea that it might, you know, our oil might eventually go away. And
or at least not keep expanding in its product.
Right. Maybe get more expensive at least. He kind of out of nowhere just asked the question. So how do you kids deal with your phones? How do you tell when to when you have them out and when to put them in your pockets and when's polite to use them and when it's not? And yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on that being a retro shifted person.
I think most people don't know when to have the phones in or out of their pocket. They do it wrong. But it brings up another thing. I think kids today, they look at our generation or older generations. Sorry, I don't want to include you guys. And they wonder how the hell we managed to procreate. I mean, how the fuck do you meet your girlfriend if you don't have a cell phone?
Right. That's a good question.
And we used to, you know, used to tell somebody, hey, I'll be X place at X time. Mm-hmm. And you were. And now it's like, whatever. You just drift and maybe get a text and wander over one direction or the other. So it's a very different lifestyle.
Yeah.
When the zombies come, they're screwed, these kids.
Seriously, yeah.
We'll be okay.
Instagram will not stop them.
It'll produce some fine photos of all the carnage, though.
Of your last moments.
Yeah. No, that was actually one of my biggest frustrations with having a cell phone. And I actually do not at present have a cell phone. I have an iPhone, which you see over here. I don't have a cell contract because I realize that I don't like being constantly contactable. And there are certain places where it's like a really good idea to have it. Like if you're an EMT or a paramedic, like you probably have to have a cell phone that's always on. I'm a school bus driver, and our office like just got computers like 2 years ago. And so, you know, there's not too many reasons for me to need to be in touch with everyone all the time.
If a kid's maybe on the floor with a thing popping out of his belly, you don't need a phone for that?
Actually, 911 without a SIM card, it works. What the fuck?
It's true. Actually, yeah. I can still make a 911 call with that. But I assume if the predator,
I would call Ridley Scott before I call 911.
Is that the predator or the
alien?
It's
happening. Your movie happened.
If there's a creature exploding from the belly of a student, I'm assuming that the radio is not going to stop that. It's not going to solve that problem.
In fact, you should just kick it to death.
Which is why they train us for situations like that.
If a xenomorph bursts forth from a child's belly.
So, we have a radio. It's not a citizen's band, but it's like, you know, one of those private band sort of Motorola.
It's a civic band.
Yes.
Yeah, when the cell phones stop working, it still works.
I believe so, yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah, so that's, so basically I don't need a cell phone. But you made me think of my primary frustration with things was having a cell phone and people making plans and then 5 minutes from the time of the plan saying, oh, sorry, it's going to be 7:30, which really just means, you know, they are... They're poor planners and bad movers and shakers.
Or we can now afford to do that. Like, I used to be an on-time guy. I've realized in the past month or so that, like, almost every time I go anywhere, I hop on my bike, I text them, gonna be there 10 minutes late.
Hmm. Oh, so you've noticed
I
that? Can't,
yeah. As soon as I didn't text until 2010. And I realized I've gotten sloppy because I can afford to now.
Yeah,
which is I'm probably burning social capital left and freaking right.
But we're losing trust between each other, though.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems to be the issue.
It's also a very like European white folk kind of way of time. Like you know, you visit Latin America or Africa. I don't know about Asia, but like, 10 minutes late. Why the hell would you text me for that? But I don't know. Given the context, given that I don't live in Africa or Latin America,
mm-hmm.
I should probably just play nice with my culture and fucking be on time.
Yeah, that comparing that, or sorry, combining that with bicycle riding is also kind of a, you know, you have to be doubly on the spot for timing and leaving the house on time and all that, because a bicycle can't zip up to like 60 miles an hour to make up the lost time on the freeway or something. But yeah, that's interesting. So I'm curious, this the whole idea of trust. You're just talking about like is it kind of like do you think that speaks to a fundamental shift in how much our trust has eroded, or do you think it's more just like we just can't trust what people say about like the hands on the watch or the clock?
I'm not sure. I think it's we have so much more information today, and we sort of expect it. We're almost kind of cued along with it. Our life kind of flows with it. Whereas before you just say, hey, I'll see you on Sunday at 7:30.
Right.
So you can make that appointment a month ahead of time and you just turn up. But nowadays, I mean, I sent you an email, I think on Thursday.
Right.
Just saying, hey, we're still good. If we didn't have email, or I probably wouldn't have done that. Same thing with texting is if I'm meeting a friend for a drink next Wednesday at 6, I'm just going to go.
Right.
But now it's very much the norm that you're going to get a text saying, hey, we're still on.
Like, so you have to
like we don't trust
that.
Each other anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
So what are you doing tonight, Brock? Well, I was going to go, but he never texted to confirm, so I don't know. Maybe it's off.
Right, right.
Guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I was having a conversation
really
with somebody.
That's weird. I hadn't thought of this.
I think I was talking to Dave Foyt. He and I got together for beers a couple months ago, and I was lending him my my YouTube Pop Mart DVD so he could watch that. But there was something where I think he was...
Did you say you have Pop Mart on DVD?
I have Pop Mart on
DVD.
That's
awesome. Go ahead.
It's their most their most decked out show, you know, where they're just like pulling out all the stops.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to remember where I was going with that story.
Trust.
Yeah. Oh, right. It was basically like, you know, are you sure this time works for you? I think was the question that David asked me, and I said, "Yeah, it's cool, but you know what? The worst that can happen if we're meeting at a pub is I can order an extra beer." Which really is not all that bad. If you look at it that way, you know, there are certain things you want to make sure you're on time for, you know, like court or church, you know, especially high church or something like that.
The Anglicans have no patience.
So you're saying it's actually a courtesy to be a little late so someone can enjoy an extra beer?
It depends on how socially lubricated you want them to be. I want the truth from this son of a gun.
Exactly.
I'm going to show up 15 minutes late.
Exactly. Yeah. But I thought that was interesting. Like maybe partially, you know, a pub is not a place where you're expected to be exactly on time, whereas, you know, something else might
you
be.
You can escape the space of flows, man, and the presence in your body to one another.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm leaving now.
Yeah. This is getting weird. I'm curious, is there anything else that you've retro-shifted? Anything else that that you would encourage us to retro-shift on?
Way to turn that into a verb. I like that.
Please do, yeah. I mean, well, I should have to check it out because I think Xerox got into trouble.
Is that right?
Their trademark. Yeah, RetroShift is trademark pending. So
okay,
we'll see. It's we have at RetroShift on Twitter for all those technology people.
And, there we go.
RetroShift.com and Facebook/RetroShift. And I'm not sure if it becomes a verb if that's good or bad. But I think Germany. I think in German they use the phrase RetroShift to explain, you know, backwards like a. You know, looking at things more simply.
Oh, that's cool to know.
Yeah, those Germans, you know.
Yeah. Oh, they're very plain spoken. They tell it like it is. Yeah.
But nothing. Can't think of anything else.
Okay. Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
Well, that's all right. We've already talked about quite a few, so I think you're safe. Well, maybe we should hop in and grab our mail segment real quick.
Yes.
And do you want to look at this one? And I'll pull up because I know there's another one that came in like today or yesterday or something. So you, Brandon, get that one.
You've got mail.
And thank I'll get you. The, yeah.
I'm finding it. There it is. I think I can fit it all on one screen. All right. Who's this? I got to find who this is from. Rory C. from Kalamazoo. Wow. Really? From Kalamazoo? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. I love the show. Listen to it every week. It's warming up here in Michigan. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah, thank you. It's warming up here in Michigan enough for me to hop back on my bike. I commute to college 5 days a week. I remember you guys talking about merino wool, and I'm looking into investing in some. Nice. Any suggestions on any specific company or what to look for when buying? Keep up the great work. P.S. You guys should check out Bell's Brewery Oberon Ale.
It sounds nice.
Yeah. If you ever get the chance, it's a fantastic summer wheat ale. Well, it's an 80-degree day. I wish I'd read that three hours ago.
Yeah, we're coming into the summer wheat season, I think. Logan sent us something via Google Reader. The new global database on bus rapid transit is launched, and it's kind of cool, actually. It sounds like it might be an open source sort of thing where they're inviting transit agencies all over the world to say, where is your bus rapid transit? Where are those lines and how can you...
Why would you want a database of where BRT is?
So you can know everything at once.
Because it's a missing hole in our interwebs.
Exactly.
Real quick, Brock, do you have any response to Rory from Kalamazoo about wool?
About wool in particular?
For you. I have no comment about wool.
My favorite place to get wool is the thrift store. If you can find a good merino sweater for like $5, you know, at Goodwill.
I think besides the one shot in a million.
I think that's where I got mine. The only problem with that is that they're hard to find. I've been using Smart Wool products recently. I like Smart Wool a lot. I've also heard good things about Icebreaker and I think Ibex. So, I mean, they're all out there. But yeah, the one that I wear most often is a sweater that I found at Goodwill from Cambridge Classics, and it just happens to be merino. So
Cambridge Classics.
Yeah.
What exactly is Smart Wool?
Smart Wool.
Some spandex in it or something.
Really intelligent goats. It's designed to be machine washable and basically behave a lot more like your everyday clothes wearing fabrics than most wool clothing has traditionally been. So, for example, this weekend I took mostly wool socks and I had my Smart Wool t-shirt with me. And, because it's wool, it evaporates, dries out faster than cotton does. It's a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more flexible. I personally enjoy them quite a bit. And then you can put them in the washing machine after you've had a bender of a night and thrown up all over yourself. So that's that.
Bender wool.
That's put my vote in for cashmere.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not cheap, but it does work really well.
Right. And then let's see. There was one more that I thought was interesting. Oh, Chris from Arcata. He actually, while we're on the topic of clothing, he has a thumbs up to the Levi's 511 skinny commuter jeans. He bought a pair, tried them, and apparently they work out pretty well. So. Yeah, I'm a fan of the Swerve myself just because they're a smaller company and I like to support the underdog. But if you have a hard time finding, or if you can't afford the independent thing, apparently Chris likes the Levi's 511 skinny commuter jeans.
I saw the ad for
that
and was shocked that they're entering that market.
Yeah,
there's even a pocket for your U-lock.
Right, and you know what that is? It's indicative of a shift in culture. We've been talking a little bit about how teenagers are less...
shift, bro?
Yes, if we're talking about how teenagers are less excited these days about getting their driver's license than they have been, people would rather have maybe a new gadget than a car if they had to choose between the two. I think it leads a lot more people to riding bikes as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the big companies are starting to pick up on that trend. So Levi's, for example, now makes biking jeans. So anyways,
hey,
yeah, pretty cool.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's great.
And I think that's just about it. I will probably close this out for now. And that'll be the end of our show. Well, Adam, thank you for coming in and joining us. We appreciate your input and your perspectives.
And creativity.
Yeah. Again, where can people find you on the interwebs?
It's just retroshift.com.
Fantastic.
And I'd encourage anybody, if you're even faintly interested in sports, is get out and watch some cyclocross races.
Oh, we didn't even talk about cyclocross.
Holy shit. I was thinking we were going to spend a good chunk of it.
Well, you know what? We're not up to the hour mark yet. Let's talk about cyclocross real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us what you like about it.
Do you have any affinity or love of mud wrestling at all?
You know, not historically, but I could be convinced.
Yeah, so it's mud wrestling with bicycles, basically.
I have seen the pictures. Jonathan Moss always has great collections of photos from all the cyclocross events here and about town. So, yeah, it looks amazing. Especially, there's a costume element to at least one of the big events every year.
Halloween time.
That's it. Yeah,
a lot of costumes. Yeah, a lot of fun. The race, the way the format is, it's not like a road race where the bikes go past once and you're done. It's a festive atmosphere. It's a little bit like closest thing is like a European circus.
Yeah.
And there's some freaky people out there. But yeah, the course is great. It's really easy access. You can go stand wherever you want. Yeah. People are really loud, cheering a lot, great atmosphere. The courses are just 2 miles around, so you can see the races go by 5 or 6 times per race.
Right.
What is it? Cross Crusades in Portland is actually, I understand it. It's not just the biggest cyclocross series in America. It's the biggest in the world. And we have it right here in Portland.
Wow.
That's nice to know. Yeah.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah, and, for sure.
1,000+ people will turn up to race.
Yeah, the events are packed. I went out to see, once again, our friend David Hetty, who is going to become... We should give him a gold star for being, most mentioned on this episode.
Indeed.
Yeah, but he went out for one of those a couple of years ago, and we rode our bikes out to the event. It was at Barton Park out near... towards Estacada, not quite to Estacada. But they had set the whole place up. It was like a, it really was like a street fair or something. You know, they had vendors, they had people giving away samples of food and beer, and you could buy beer if you wanted it. It was fantastic.
And then periodic screaming as people passed. That sounds great.
And
that
like
sounds...
every 5 minutes, you just have like this big pack of bicyclists like tearing through, you know, the mud. Yeah. So pretty impressive. Do you have a favorite location?
All of them. Anything.
Okay.
Alpenrose is a really, really fun place, but the only issue there is it's right in a neighborhood, so you actually can't make as much noise. They ask you not to scream as much.
Right.
So yeah, miss that one. But it's really close. Great course.
Yeah.
The guys at
Alpenrose is a dairy. It's where they make the milk and put it into packages.
Some of the mud smells like it too.
Yeah. They also have a velodrome there, right?
It gets bubbles in it.
They have like a big velodrome for people to do track racing on, and right. So it sounds like Alpenrose is just like the place to go if you like riding bikes on on courses and maybe in competition. That's the place to be.
Yeah,
one of them. But then again, there are many more.
Yeah, so. It starts up September. Just take a chance. If you live in Portland, if you live anywhere in America, just see if you can find a race and go.
Sure. Does one need anything special to compete?
You can take anything. I mean, you can take a mountain bike. Don't take a regular road bike because it'll clog up with mud and you'll cry.
Yeah, yeah. And no one wants to cry in public.
No.
Yeah. That sounds like a ton of
fun.
Have
you had an issue with crying in public? Is that,
No, but that's because I don't.
Okay.
Well, that's it. Once again, retroshift.com. Adam, thank you again for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Good to have you with us. Brandon, anything else?
No.
Are you sure?
May your kale prosper this sunny week.
Fantastic. We're on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us your emails. Send us anything you want to tell us. It's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can call us or text us 503-847-9774. Thanks to the Google. Ryan J. Lane gives us our theme music. He's on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Next week, you'll hear the Hurt Bird News Center when we actually talk about the news. This has been the Sprocket Podcast, and we will see you all later on. Thanks again for joining us. Have a fantastic, sunny, warming week.
Yeah.
Bye.